TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's raised by wolves.
Hello, Danny Cunningham.
Good afternoon, Manny Hill. How are you today?
I'm all over the place today.
All over the place. Why is that?
Well, because the NFL draft, I mean, we've been like neck deep in NFL draft coverage with the Vikings and
everything tonight.
Yeah, you're like completely checked out, even though you're wearing a Cleveland Browns
shirt. The Browns won the first round of the draft.
Just by trading for Odell, they traded
their pick for Odell Beckham Jr. No other team in the NFL can say that they have a franchise quarterback and Odell Beckham Jr. on their roster. The Browns won the first round, and no one can tell me otherwise. So I'm celebrating. I'm dancing on everyone else's grave today by wearing a Browns long sleeve tee.
Yeah, you're just chomping at the bit right
now. I should have worn my Odell jersey. I mean,
I'm surprised you didn't, to be honest with you.
I'm not a huge jersey wearer.
I have not worn a jersey in, I mean, I'm 35 now. I probably haven't worn a jersey since I was like maybe in my late 20s.
Yeah.
And it was only to like attend a sporting event.
Sure.
But like, the days of like wearing a jersey just as like a regular item of clothing just on a normal day is like way gone.
See, I think the rule is that you can't wear a jersey of someone that is younger than you.
That's fair.
Like the player.
That's fair.
So like I can wear an Odell jersey because he's a year older than me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But a Baker Mayfield jersey is not as simple.
The best jersey combination I've ever seen was, interestingly enough, at a Minnesota Twins game at Target Field 5 years ago, a guy was wearing a Rasheed Wallace Portland Trail Blazers jersey with jorts. And
see,
the jersey was tucked in.
You know what could have topped that? A Rasheed Wallace Atlanta Hawks jersey. That would have been better. If you have one of those, I applaud you.
Yeah.
That is one of the all-time jersey finds.
So the NBA playoffs.
Going on.
They're happening. Isn't it amazing that the only real series that has like compelling interest right now is like the one that everybody thought was probably going to go pretty quickly?
It is interesting, and I wouldn't dismiss compelling interest away from San Antonio and Denver.
I just
think that those two teams are ones that are kind of afterthoughts, and the compelling interest is there in Golden State and LA because
even though we know who's going to win the series,
we do, but it's fun to think about what if the Clippers do this? What if they do this? And coming back from 3-1 down against this Warriors team would be unbelievable. It would also be the most storybook ending to this Warriors run. Because the Durant era Warriors started because they blew a 3-1 lead to the Cavs in the 2016 NBA Finals.
Yep.
This era never starts if that doesn't happen. Durant does not go and join the Warriors if they win the title and don't blow that 3-1 lead against the Cavs. And I don't think that's a debate. I think that I don't know if he stays in OKC, but he doesn't go to Golden State.
Correct. I agree.
So that's how this era started. And if this era were to end by blowing a 3-1 lead to the 8 seed, it would do so many things. It would end the Durant era the same way that it started it. It would unseat the 2007 We Believe Warriors as the greatest first-round upset of all time, because that currently is.
Mm-hmm.
And Game 7, if the Clippers were to win Game 7, it would be the final game inside of Oracle Arena ever. So it would be unbelievable. You could not write a better story for this era to end.
Well, and when you think
unless
about,
you like the Warriors, and then obviously you could write a far better story of how you would want it to end. But for us, I think it's more fun to think about it this way.
Yeah, and we both know, and everybody knows, the Warriors are going to win this series. They're probably going to win Game 6 and finish the series up
by
in
like
six,
30.
But it is really, really fun to think about, just to imagine like what sort of impact, not just on the Warriors, but like what it could have, the impact it could have on the rest of the league, the rest of the playoffs, certainly. And it's just a lot of fun. It's just really a lot of fun to think about.
It's also crazy because we went into this series with that the Clippers were losing. It was a foregone conclusion. I think it still is.
Mm-hmm.
But the Clippers are winners of this playoffs because of the showing that they've had. They're winning this playoffs because they're essentially auditioning for free agents, and I don't think they could have done a better job. It's also wild to me that they went 0-2 at home, but they've won 2 out of 3 on the road. The visiting team is 1-4 in that series.
That's amazing.
Or the home team.
The home team is one and four.
Yeah, the visiting team is 4-1.
That is amazing. Also, Doc Rivers, like, even now, I think he would have my vote for Coach of the Year. I know you've told me off air that he would have your vote for Coach of the Year.
And that is all voted on prior to the playoffs starting. That award and playoff outcomes have no bearing on how that award is decided. So everyone that votes for that, neither you or I had a vote.
Right.
Those votes are all due, I think, April 13th. They were due the day before the playoffs began.
But it's amazing, like, if the Clippers were to come back and win this series, how do you not just give the award to Doc Rivers?
Yeah, I think based on the regular season, I would have voted for him. He definitely would have been in my top three.
Yeah.
But I think I would have voted for him, and it is incredible that the coaching job that he's done, not only in this series, because that's been remarkable, but all season long, he's been awesome for the Clippers.
And the way they've continuously traded their best player 3 years in a row, they've done this, and they just continue to stay competitive and good, and here they are in the postseason pushing potentially the greatest team of all time to six games at least.
Yep.
I mean, it's amazing. And coming back from 31 points down in game two, I mean, this is remarkable stuff, man. In a first round that has otherwise been kind of a dud. I mean, there were a couple of game one wins that kind of made you turn your head a little bit.
And Portland OKC was fun, but not super competitive because it was a 5-game series. Like, it was a fun series. It was just, you know, once the Blazers won game four, you kind of knew it was over.
Yeah, and then you look at, like, Philadelphia and Brooklyn. I mean, Brooklyn had a nice showing in game one. They go in and kind of shock everybody by winning that game. But you just kind of knew. They weren't going to beat the Sixers ever in that series. So I think for this first round to be overall kind of a dud, I think this has been a nice – the Clippers have been kind of a nice breath of fresh air, even though they're not going to win the series. But it's been kind of a nice breath of fresh air to see them compete and push the Warriors this far.
Yeah, so. And I mean, we've seen a couple of sweeps in the first round. We've seen two gentlemen sweeps, two more 5-game series. So it hasn't been the most competitive one, but it's been a fun first round. I think that some of the off-the-court stuff's been fun, too. Like the whole phone thing happening in Philadelphia, Jared Dudley against Ben Simmons. That stuff is fun as well. But the actual basketball, I'm very excited for the second round to finally get here, provided the Warriors win another game this year.
How disappointed are you in OKC's overall showing? I'm really disappointed.
I don't know that I'm disappointed. I didn't expect it, but it makes sense. Because Russell Westbrook has not been very good all year. I'm not saying he's been bad, but he was
terrible in this
series. He can't shoot anymore. He was the least efficient mid-range shooter in the NBA this year. He was worse than Andrew Wiggins at shooting mid-range jump shots. And that is absolutely saying something. And for them to be a successful team, and I've been saying this for 2 years, they need to operate as if Paul George is the best player on that roster. Even though Russell Westbrook thinks that he is, Paul George actually is. And maybe last year he wasn't, but this year he definitely was. Even last year, they needed to operate as if Paul George was the best player on that roster. That's the way they're going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
When Paul George is hurt, and I mean, Paul George just like couldn't dribble.
Yeah, he did not look like himself at all this series.
I'm sure we're going to find out in the next 7 to 10 days that he underwent some type of procedure on his shoulder or something like that. But it's when he's not healthy and not right, what else do you expect? And they had no one to guard Dame Lillard.
What do you think of Billy Donovan?
I think that it would be an easy move to fire him, but I don't think he's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Russ is going to play how Russ wants to play, and I don't think any coach is going to change that. Russ thinks that because he won an MVP and because he did all these things, all of this is going to continue to work. I'm not so sure he's going to adjust and adapt, because as he ages, his athleticism isn't what it once was. Mm-hmm. And his athleticism was a giant part of his game. Yes, he plays the floor well, and he can pass well, and he can do all of these things, but he doesn't have quite the leaping ability he once has. He's a half step slower than he once was. And on the surface, it might not seem like that's a big deal, but it's a huge deal because you can't do everything that you used to be able to do. He finished at the rim really well, but he couldn't get to the rim against Portland as often as he needed to. And that's a problem, because then you do end up settling for these jumpers that you are statistically awful at.
How good is Dame?
Unbelievable.
Oh my God. I've been a fan of his forever, but like, to see him just perform this way in the playoffs and to just hit nail that dagger at the end to seal it was just amazing. And he is like, if you don't fully know about Damian Lillard and like how good he's been for, and I get it because he's playing in the Pacific Northwest and he's on the West Coast and people don't really get a chance to see a lot of Portland Trail Blazers games.
Start at 10:30 Eastern, 9:30 Central. It's and yeah, you can. I said this on Raised by Wolves on Tuesday with Dane Moore. You can be a league pass person and still not watch the Blazers because mm-hmm. you can also be a normal American with a job that you have to wake up in the morning for.
Yes.
So no matter how much of a league pass person you are, you have a bedtime. Like mm-hmm. you can be a league pass person and watch a ton of Brooklyn Nets games because they start at 6 o'clock Central Time. That makes sense. But it's a lot harder for a team that's so far away in the Pacific Northwest playing games that start at 9:30 your time. Like that's just a hard team to watch if you have a normal job.
Yeah, and I was just really impressed with. I was disappointed with how OKC performed overall, but there were a lot of factors in that. I mean, we talked about with Russ and you know PG not being healthy and everything. But I was equally as impressed with how Damian Lillard played and how CJ McCollum played too, because CJ didn't really have wasn't a bad year, but he didn't really have a typical CJ year. He didn't shoot as well as he has in the past. But this series, he was really, really, really good.
He was. And I think we came into the season thinking that CJ was definitely their second best player. Mm-hmm. And for much of the year, he was not their second best player because right. Nurkic was.
Yep.
Like that's so that changed in the playoffs. Obviously, Nurkic being injured is a big reason as
and
to
I
why.
Thought that was going to hurt them. I thought that was going to hurt them even in this series.
I think you were crazy to think it wouldn't hurt them.
Yeah.
Because the assumption was that you can't play Enes Kanter. I mean, we all remember mm-hmm. the can't play Kanter. The assumption was they wouldn't be able to play him. But and also another guy that looks old is Steven Adams.
See, and that
Steven Adams looks like he's your age and he's my age.
Yeah, and that's I thought going into this series, I actually picked Oklahoma City to win the series.
I did too in six games.
Yeah, and I thought Nurkic being out, and I thought that was an opportunity for Steven Adams to really thrive and mm-hmm. really to take control of the series. And he just wasn't able to do that. He just
looks
didn't move.
Old man.
And Kanter played well and I don't know, man. I was very disappointed in OKC, like I said, but equally as impressed with how well Portland played. And Terry Stotts can coach, man. Terry Stotts can really, really coach.
They absolutely made the right decision in keeping him last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because that wasn't always going to be the case. Like, there were rumblings that they thought about moving on from him after they got swept by the Pelicans in the first round as the three seed, and I get that. Like you should maybe have a conversation about that, but they absolutely made the right move there.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, because I remember we had, before you were here, we had Sean Hyken on last year just talking about the playoffs and everything, and I asked him, I said, how do they feel about Terry Stotts out there? And he was just like, well, Dame loves him. Like mm-hmm. He and Dame have a great relationship, and he basically said if the reason why they're going to keep him is because of that relationship between those two. And if you let Terry Stotts go, you risk alienating your franchise player. And they want to keep Dame around and keep Dame happy as long as possible. So, I mean, he's done a really, really nice job. And, again, we talked about this in Show of Hands earlier this week about how you look at how the Blazers have everything that they've sort of lost and with injuries or bad picks and bad contracts, not as many bad contracts as, you know, maybe like the Wolves or something like that.
But oh, you don't say.
Not quite that many bad contracts. But when you factor in like losing LaMarcus Aldridge a couple of years ago and to lose a player of that caliber and still be a playoff team that can contend a little bit now, this is the first time they've gotten out of the first round since losing LaMarcus, but
I mean,
to be good and relevant, at least, has been really impressive, and that's a testament to Terry Stotts.
And their Game 4 win was the biggest win that they've had as a franchise, I think you can say, since Dame's buzzer beater against Houston in 2013 or 2014.
I think it was 2013, yeah.
That won the series in Game 6 against Houston to put them into the second round. That was the biggest win since then, and it's a long time. It's a really long time for a franchise that is perennially in the playoffs.
Yeah, I know what it's like to watch a franchise that takes a really long time to get out of the first round of the playoffs. I know all about that.
They haven't been in the first round of the playoffs, Manny.
I know, but
oh,
I'm
you're
saying,
talking about
I'm
the
talking
Minnesota
about
Wild.
Back.
You're talking about the Minnesota Wild.
I'm talking about the early KG era. It took them, it was seven years in a row. They made the playoffs and got bounced from the first round.
Yeah, that's not great either. I want to flip over to the East because that's where my interest is.
I was just going to ask
I'm super
you,
interested
yeah.
in the Rockets facing whoever they're going to face in the second round because we don't know that yet. But I'm more interested in the Eastern Conference at this point. I think that this second round coming up is exactly everything I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. We're now, getting the four teams I wanted so badly.
Now, let me ask you this.
Ask away.
Has your opinion of, I mean, these are the two matchups that we've wanted, that we anticipated, but did the first round change your, did anybody do anything that changed your thought on how these matchups could potentially go that's different now than what it was when the playoffs started?
I don't think so, because when the playoffs, I feel better about the way I picked.
Okay.
After the first round playing. Because I picked Boston and Toronto to win these series, mm-hmm. and I feel better about that. Especially now with the news coming down today that Malcolm Brogdon's going to miss games one and two at the very Ooh. Least of that series against Boston for the Bucks.
Oh, that's big.
That's something that hurts them because yeah. it's one less creator, it's one less ball handler, all of these things that they desperately
defender.
Need. Yes. Yeah. That's going to hurt them against Boston. Gordon Hayward playing really well against Indiana is a big thing for the Boston Celtics. Kyrie Irving's going to be Kyrie Irving and be as good as he can possibly be when the lights are the brightest. And the Bucks haven't experienced lights this bright before. They've not ever been out of the first round. This, I mean, you just talked about knowing what it's like to watch a team that couldn't get past the first round. This was their mm-hmm. first series win since 01. That's yeah. longer than the Wolves.
Yeah.
That's a longer drought
18
than
years.
The Wolves. Yeah. I mean, there are plenty, there are listeners to this podcast that were not alive the last time the Bucks got out of the first round.
What were you doing in 2001?
I was in
the spring of 2001.
First grade. I was in first grade.
I was a junior in high school. I remember that Bucks team, too.
I don't.
They took.
I was
that,
too young.
That Bucks team, that was the Ray Allen, Sam Cassell, Big Dog Robinson mm-hmm. trio. And they pushed the Allen Iverson Sixers to seven games
yeah.
in the Eastern Conference Finals. That Bucks team almost went to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, Ray Allen almost would have been the one to get stepped over.
But what do you think about Philadelphia and Toronto, though? Because that's the one I'm kind of with you. I think Boston's probably going to beat Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
But the Philly-Toronto one is, I'm kind of wavering on that because that Philly starting lineup is so good from top to bottom. Now, Embiid, how healthy is Joel Embiid? I think that matters big time. But I'm really interested to see how Toronto matches up with that starting five.
I am too. I'm more interested in how Philadelphia defends Toronto. Hmm. Where are they going to put Tobias Harris? Where are they going to put Ben Simmons? Where are they going to put Jimmy Butler? Obviously, Joel Embiid's going to guard Marc Gasol, but you've got Kawhi Leonard who you have to worry about. You have Pascal Siakam who you have to worry about. You have Kyle Lowry who you have to worry about. You have Danny Green who you have to worry about. That's where I'm most interested in how the Sixers are going to match up defensively against Philadelphia. And I think the thing that's underrated and we don't think about with the Sixers or with the Raptors enough is they've got three starters that will get all defensive team votes.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Green will get all defensive team votes. Pascal Siakam will get all defensive team votes. And obviously Kawhi Leonard yep. will as well, even though Kawhi didn't play necessarily that well during the regular season. He kind of coasted, but he's got that reputation, and mm-hmm. he showed in the first round at times, too. Hey, I can still do this.
That game four in Orlando, he was so lethal in that game. Every time he mm-hmm. touched the ball, something happened.
I think he is the best player in the Eastern Conference playoffs. He wasn't the best player in the East in the regular season, but he is the best player in the Eastern Conference playoffs, and there's a difference.
If you're Nick Nurse, do you put him on Ben Simmons? At least in spurts?
I think you probably put Pascal Siakam on Ben Simmons, I would
okay.
think. I think you would put Pascal Siakam there. I think you put Kyle Lowry, excuse me, on J.J. Redick.
Mm-hmm.
You put Danny Green
on Jimmy.
I'm probably on Tobias.
Or do you put Kawhi on Jimmy?
You probably put Kawhi on Jimmy, and obviously Marc Gasol and Joel Embiid are mm-hmm. going to be paired at the hip for a while. But
I'm so intrigued.
I'm very interested. The only thing that makes me worry about the Toronto Raptors is the game one issue that they always have. Like, I'm such a firm believer in the game one curse that I was surprised the Spurs won game one with DeMar DeRozan on their roster. Like, that's how much of a real thing I think.
You thought DeMar carried it over to San Antonio with him?
Yes. I thought that, like, if you just had so much experience with that franchise, you were perennially going to have that curse on you. Stunned they won a game one with DeMar DeRozan on the roster.
See, what's funny, too, is I thought going into that Orlando series, I thought Kawhi being there would completely nullify the game one.
And then Kyle Lowry comes out and gives you a 0 point performance.
Yeah. Then it's like, yeah, Kyle Lowry's still there.
Yeah. Like it's. But I picked the Raptors to win the Eastern Conference prior to the season. And I'm sticking with that pick. I think that they're going to be the team that comes out East. And the way the Warriors look right now, they could very well be the team that wins the title. I texted a friend yesterday. I said, I'm very close to making a pick for the Toronto Raptors to win it all. I'm very, very close. Because after game one, they looked like the team we thought they were going to be. After game one against Orlando, that's exactly what they looked like. And if they play like that, they're going to be very tough to beat four times in seven games.
Does it seem like they would match up the best against the Warriors too?
I think so, because defensively, they've got those three guys that are all really good defenders. There's not a team in the league with three better defenders on the wing than those guys.
If I feel like Pascal Siakam could be really disruptive.
He's so good.
Against the Warriors. Like, he could just cause some real issues for them.
I think he's going to cause real issues for the Sixers, too. And Kawhi will be on Ben Simmons at times, and I should add this, and Ben can't do anything when Kawhi's on him. If you go back and watch those two teams played four times in the regular season. Kawhi only played in three of them. Also, fun fact on a stat coming up in a second. Mm-hmm. Kawhi played in three of them, and Ben Simmons was useless in all three games. The fun fact here is that Kawhi Leonard is 13-0 in his career against the Philadelphia 76ers. He has not lost a single game against Philadelphia in his entire career.
That's amazing.
Now, granted.
Now, part of that was during the process when he was on
the Spurs.
Sure. Yeah.
But still, 13-0. That's my second favorite individual win-loss record ever.
Pascal Siakam is, like, that's where you just look at Masai Ujiri and just, like, you're just finding a guy like that and turning him into this type of a player. I mean, because he was picked, what, 20th?
7th, 27th.
27th?
He was, I actually wrote this today for Score North on the... I wrote about all of the guys. I went back because today is the night of the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. So in the spirit of the season, I went back and talked about the guys that they have passed on. And obviously, we all know the big ones. Like, oh, they passed on Steph Curry. They passed on DeMarcus Cousins and Paul George and Gordon Hayward and Kawhi Leonard and all these guys.
And Klay Thompson.
Klay Thompson. But they also passed on Kemba Walker, Tobias Harris, guys that you don't think about. Mm-hmm. They passed on CJ McCollum. They passed on Rudy Gobert. Obviously, Giannis was in that draft in 2013, too, that they passed on.
Giannis was one pick after Shabazz Muhammad.
Yes. Shabazz went 14th. And then Giannis went 15th.
Yep.
They took Gorgui Dieng and Shabazz Muhammad ahead of Giannis in that draft. Well, technically, Utah took them, but still, mm-hmm. you get what I'm saying.
Yep.
They passed on Caris LeVert. They passed on Jamal Murray. They passed on Pascal Siakam. They passed on Malcolm Brogdon. Like, all of these guys that are making... And guys like Pascal Siakam, okay, 26 teams passed on him. Mm-hmm. Malcolm Brogdon went in the second round. Everyone passed on him once. Like, those things are going to always happen.
But being part of building a terrific roster is being able to identify those guys when other teams are not thinking about them,
mm-hmm.
and finding them. I mean, that's where you give Masai Ujiri a lot of credit, because he identified Pascal Siakam, drafted him, and here we are.
And it's a testament to player development, too.
Yes.
Because, you can identify and select all you want, but if you don't have the right people to develop that type of talent, none of that matters. So that's the player development staff in Toronto deserves a huge shout-out because of the way that their young guys have come along. I mean, look at Fred VanVleet.
Mm-hmm.
Look at a guy like him. He's the same story. He's not as good as Pascal Siakam, and he never will be.
But he's an impact player.
Where was he picked?
Guy you can have.
I mean, look at that. Look at finding guys like those. That's where you find teams that are successful. Cleveland did that. Matthew Dellavedova was an undrafted guy that they turned into a rotation player on a finals team.
Yeah, the guy things was actually like that contributing matters. To it. Yeah.
I mean, he shut down Steph Curry for two games as an undrafted guy.
Yeah, that's I mean, that is the thing that the Wolves have just done. No matter, and it hasn't mattered who has been coaching or who has been drafting. It none of that has mattered. That's the one thing that the Wolves have really not done a very good job at, is just identifying players later in drafts and developing them and turning them into positive contributors. Now, Josh Okogie is a guy they took with the 20th pick last summer. There might be something there. It mm-hmm. looks like there's something there, and that's a start. If you can build off of that, that's a start. But that is, the Wolves have got to get better at that, man.
I'll go even further than that. Kata Bates-Diop at 48.
Sure.
That looks like a good pick right now.
Yeah.
That looks like a win. You need to
picking up, you've talked about Cam Reynolds.
You need to have more of those.
Yeah. You've got to, you have to make that a habit. Finding guys like that and developing them, you have to turn that into a habit where it just every year you get to a point where you are like San Antonio, where you're amazed at how they continue to find guys like Bryn Forbes who end up being a contributor and things like that. So
guys like Derek White,
yeah,
DeJounte Murray, you can just keep naming off guys that they continue to find it, and it's because one, they can identify them, and two, their player development staff is awesome.
So I want to get back to on this podcast and on Show of Hands too, of random Timberwolves of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And you texted me last night.
I did.
And it made me think of a random Timberwolf of the week for myself. You asked me what happened to the Timberwolves first round pick in 2012.
I did.
The Wolves had a first round pick in 2012. It was not their own. It belonged to the it originally belonged to the Utah Jazz.
Correct.
And they got that pick because of the Al Jefferson trade that David Kahn made a couple of years prior. He traded Al Jefferson to Utah for, I think it was, two protected first-round picks and Kosta Koufos, who is still in the league right now, which is amazing in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, not very good, but...
He was not very good here either. And so the... Wolves.
I think he was high school teammates with C.J. McCollum, though. Fun fact. I think they both went to Canton Glen Oak, yeah.
Okay. All right.
But go on. Sorry for that.
No worries. So the Wolves ended up with the 18th pick in the draft in 2012 because the Jazz had made the playoffs. The Jazz won the last game of the regular season against the Phoenix Suns, and both teams were basically the winner of that game was going to be the 8th seed and make the playoffs. Well, the draft pick was lottery protected, so if Utah would have lost the game, they would have missed the playoffs, and the Wolves wouldn't have gotten the pick. The Wolves ended up trading that pick to Houston for Chase Buttinger.
Yep.
And that, my friends, is the random Timberwolf of the week, Chase Buttinger.
Amazing. I was doing some reading in preparation for writing that article last night, and I was looking to see who they passed on in 2012. I'm like, oh, no one. They passed on no one. Good for them. Well.
And their original pick was ended up being part of the Chris Paul trade from the then New Orleans Hornets to the Clippers, and it was the 10th pick in the draft. It ended up being Austin Rivers.
Yes.
And that pick went to the Clippers originally because of the Marko Jaric trade, thanks Kevin McHale, from many, many years prior. And because that was a pick that the Wolves owed the Clippers.
From 2000, that trade was made in August of 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And it was top 10 protected until 2011, like through 2011. And they picked in the top 10 every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just never conveyed.
It was Sam Cassell.
And the pick.
And the pick to the Clippers for Marko Jaric and Lionel Chalmers.
Chambers? Yeah.
Yeah. And
not a great move, guys.
No, it was not a great move. And then Marko, I think, was signed. I think they gave him like a 6-year, like $40 million contract or something like that, which at that time was absolutely, well, at any time, really. But at that time was an outrageous amount of money for like a rotation point guard.
He never averaged more than 8.3 points per game in a Wolves uniform.
And he once walked out onto the court with his jersey on backwards.
Is that better than walking out on the court without your jersey the way Andrew Wiggins did earlier this year? Is that better or worse?
That's a great question. That is a great question. I think Andrew's is worse. Like, Marco at least put his jersey on. He put it on backwards.
At least he remembered there was a game.
Yeah. Like, and the fact that, wasn't there something with Andrew's deal too? Like, he's done that before? He's come close to doing that before?
I hadn't seen him do it before ever, but...
Like he certainly
did it that night.
Like I saw something that said like he's come close to doing that before, but he had never like gotten that far to like actually almost tip off and not noticing that his jersey wasn't on. I know.
Amazing.
This league, man. This franchise.
It's all amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah. And you're only like 6 months into covering this team, man. Just wait. There's more.
Oh yeah.
There's plenty more to come, man.
So before we get out of here, what are your picks for the next round? At least for the series that are set. So only Eastern Conference, because neither one of the West ones are set.
I like Boston. I'm with you. I like Boston and Toronto.
How many games?
I think Boston, Milwaukee will go seven.
Okay.
I think Toronto, Philadelphia. You know what? I think both series will go seven.
I've got Boston in six, and I've got Toronto in five.
Oh, okay. Think they get done earlier, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Raised by Wolves. Follow Danny and his scribes on Score North and scorenorth.com. Follow Danny at Real D Cunningham. Follow me at Manny Hill 84. And enjoy your playoff basketball. Lots more coming up. We got a new show of hands coming up on Monday where we're getting to. We'll do another draft lottery sim and have some more fun with that stuff as well. For Danny, I'm Manny. Thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves. Follow this podcast on Podcast One, scorenorth.com, and iTunes, Spotify, wherever else you can find podcasts. Thanks for listening.